That is why it's my pleasure today to present as our guest speaker a gentleman of courage, learning, and action. Paul C. Graham is active in the Sons of Confederate Veterans in South Carolina, and he played a pivotal role in defending our heritage back in 2015 when the Charleston massacres took place. At that time, he was a spokesman, interviewed by such outlets as the BBC, CBS News, and the AP. He has served as editor of the South Carolina Division paper, the Palmetto Partisan Journal, and is a member of the Lieutenant General Wade Hampton Camp in Columbia. He's also been a professor of philosophy at Midlands Technical College, most recently working with Dr. Clive Wilson, who we all know. He began the Shotwell Press to issue books defending the South. He's currently working on a book titled Confederophobia, an American Epidemic. He understands that the battles we fight will go on, and that we must persevere despite the immense odds against us. I am honored to call Paul a friend and a compatriot, and to welcome him to the Tar Heel State. As we say up here, Paul, that valley of humility between two mountains of conceit. You may have heard that. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor and distinct pleasure introduce Mr. Paul C. Graham, a speaker for this, the 29th Annual Confederate Flag Day. His topic is Honoring Our Ancestors.
Aggressive northern political factions who continue to gather more power to themselves and would eventually render them politically impotent minority in their own country. Thus began, one by one, the reclamation of the delegated powers of the several southern states through the same method employed by their fathers in 1776, independence. Despite repeated attempts to negotiate a peaceful and equitable separation, this newly elected sectional president of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, would not receive the agents of the new Southern Union. And through secret machination and rank duplicity, breached the status quo that had prevented the effusion of blood for over 4 months, and opted to invade Charleston Harbor, thus occasioning the reduction of Fort Sumter. In this final act, he inaugurated the so-called Civil War. It was an act of aggression and conquest, even though it was repeatedly professed that its only purpose was to preserve the Union. For those who call it first shot, let us remember that the reinforcement ships were not only trespassing, but came with arms. They did not come for the purpose of protecting the people of Charleston, the purpose for which the fort had been erected, but to coerce them. They did not come with an olive branch, but with the implements of war, and spent 587 days wooing the wayward city back into its loving embrace with a sustained campaign of bombardment. Like the man who beats his wife to maintain the marital union, it was ultimately preserved in form, but not in substance. It became something altogether different, a deformed and grotesque shadow of its former magnificence. And although the people of the South have tried to make the best of it since our fathers laid down their arms and returned to face the devastation of what was left of their country, we have never been a Union proper since. Given the destruction and devastation endured by our Southern fathers and mothers, it is easy to question the advisability of their pursuit of independence. Perhaps we think a better solution could have been proposed. Perhaps, after all, the sections could have worked together for mutually beneficial solutions to the problem that faced America at that time. Or perhaps they knew their foe better than we do, and knew, beyond any reasonable doubt, that there was no compromise or mutually beneficial solution to be had. There was a time in the early to mid-20th century when it looked as though the breach would be healed and we could be reconciled, even happily reconciled, to our domestic partnership within the Union, based on a national unity that included mutual respect for one another and a belief in the sincerity of the convictions of both sides of the conflict. But as you all know, that time has passed. We are now the objects of ridicule in our own countries, in our own country, and forces have gathered together to face any lasting vestige of our fathers, and by implication our identity as Southerners, from the face of the earth. What began as a move in the direction of socialism under the guise of social justice and egalitarianism in the 1960s, what we today call political correctness, has now reached new levels of audaciousness and absurdity, especially since the Great Confederate Purge, which began at Columbia, South Carolina, the summer of 2015, with the removal of the Confederate battle flag from the South Carolina Capitol grounds, and has spread without rhyme or reason from sea to shining sea ever since. Sadly, we have moved well beyond banning Confederate flag sales at Amazon or Walmart or canceling the reruns of the Dukes of Hazzard. There's hardly a day that passes that another Orwellian outrage is committed against the memory of our fathers and by implication against us. We can no longer reason with the spiritual and intellectual heirs of the Yankee foes from which our fathers tried so valiantly to separate themselves. They are in the streets, they are violent and unpredictable, and have almost complete control of the educational institutions, entertainment industry, and mainstream media outlets. I like when you get amen. That's good. The presidential election of 2016 has only exacerbated the divide that already existed between traditional and progressive factions in these United States. The South, as you know, best represents all those things neo-Yankees despise, what they deplore, and what they have every intention of wiping from the earth. I fully expect displays such as was recently witnessed in Berkeley, California, to eventually make its way to Dixie unless some drastic changes are realized. Mr. Milo Yiannopoulos, were it not for his political views, would have been welcomed with open arms at Berkeley. If they were willing to riot, loot, and burn down a city because they disagreed with the views of an open and flamboyant Jewish homosexual with a preference for black lovers, what do you think they would do to you if you showed up? How do you think those people would respond to our gathering today if they were outside of the Capitol building? Better yet, what do you think would happen if we had attempted to have this observance on the campus of any college or university in the great state of North Carolina? Let that sink in. Berkeley is the future, and it is coming. Our only hope is to change course right now and throw the old battle plans in the trash. It is time to stop pretending that we can scrape, bow, and beg our elected officials with hat in hand and persuade them to stop the cultural genocide that is no longer the exception but is the rule. They neither want nor need a history lesson. They want the flags and monuments gone. Gone so they no longer have to deal with them and so that they no longer have to deal with us. They would like nothing better than to have an excuse, any excuse, to give them what they need to finish the job. Eventually they will find one or they will make one. We must begin today to prepare to take the monuments, flags, and other Confederate relics into our own charge. Their current caretakers are unworthy of the privilege and cannot be trusted. There can be no more compromise. From here on, they have three choices. One, leave the flags, memorials, and monuments to our fathers alone. Two, pay to have them removed to our care. Three, they can have their cities blanketed with Confederate flags, as was done in Danville, Virginia, and is being done all over Dixie today. There is not a fourth option, there is not a fifth option, there are no compromises. This is what they get, and that alone. Quite frankly, I don't care which one they take. Would be fun to bury the city. Why does it matter, folks may ask? Why the fuss over the dead? Isn't it time to pull down the flags, demolish the monuments, plow up the markers? Isn't it time to get with the program? Isn't it time to go along, to get along? Oh, if it were only that simple. The fact is that our Southern identity, our families and community ties, and the symbols of the South stand or fall together. This is because the symbols of the South do not point to abstract propositions or utopian schemes. They do not represent any silly isms or ologies like racism or classism or sexism or any ideological attempt to put the complexities of human life into a tiny little academic box. The symbols of the South point to things, not ideas, that are real and enduring. They remind us that we are a people, not solitary creatures to whom faith, family, and community are incidental or accidental, but they are fundamental to who and what we are. They remind us that we did not spring forth ex nihilo out of nothing, but are participants in a larger, unfolding human drama that began before we arrived, and God willing, will continue to unfold in its own unique way, long after we are gone and forgotten. They remind us that we are not perfect. We can and must press on, that our obligations extend beyond the present, that we have a duty to preserve, protect the traditions entrusted to our care, and a responsibility to see that they are transmitted to future generations. They remind us that we are descended from men and women who did not shrink from hardship nor shirk responsibility when all seemed to be lost. That material ruin and political subjugation did not rob them of their humanity, but made them better appreciate the things that really matter: kin and kin, blood and soil, hearthstones, headstones, and the faith of their fathers. They teach us that we can and must endure and overcome our own challenges, whatever they may be, with our dignity and honor intact, just as they did. They teach us to be better people. They give us an example to follow. The sentinels, equestrians, and flags, in many cases, at great cost and at great personal sacrifices, were erected to watch over us, to help us remember who we are, where we came from, what we can and should be, both as individuals and as people. Most of all, at least today, they remind us that we have a right to exist, that we have a right to be who and what we are, and to do so without molestation, apology, or shame. We, of course, are free. We are, of course, more than happy to live and let live, and want nothing more than to live in peace with our neighbors and those who do not particularly care for our peculiarities, but we are under no obligation whatsoever to participate in our own destruction, or sit quietly while the memories of our kin and kin are slandered and insulted. Right. Of course, we are perfectly free to do nothing as well. Hide the shadows, stay in the closet, sell our birthright, go gently into that dark, dark night. That could happen, but I, for one, do not think it is likely. Why? Because like our fathers, we long to be free. We cannot help it. It's in our blood. It's part of our genetic makeup. This is who we are, and we can't be changed. We can try to cover it up, tamp it down, burn it, bury it, have it exercised, or if all else fails, give ourselves over with reckless abandonment to the American educational establishment, but sooner or later it will resurface. It is my deepest hope and most fervent prayer, dear friends, that it will not be too late when it does. The great writers are gone, but yet they remain asleep in our soul, alive in our veins. touched by fire, when touched by frost, a whisper within us, our cause is not lost. Thank you. Thank you.